Okay, now you can go ahead and get ready.
I was born in Belfast, Manitoba. I was a printer before I joined the Army.
What education did you have, Bill?
In grade 9.
Grade 9. Where'd you work?
Central Press.
Mm-hmm. And your parents were from the Ukraine?
My mom was from Poland and my dad was from Austria.
I see. And there was no military background?
No military background at all. Mm-hmm. So, not as far as I know.
Yeah. So, when the war was declared, did you join the militia? Or were you?
I was a militia before the war declared.
Mm-hmm. You were in the
Grenadiers.
Grenadiers. And then, when did you enlist permanently?
In 1940.
Did they ask you to, or did you just do it on your own?
I did it on my own.
Mm-hmm. You liked that, eh?
Well, I liked army life. I think I...
Mm-hmm. And tell me about your basic training.
Well, we usually take mostly we took small arms, machine guns, Vickers and Lewis guns.
And that's what you were trained on?
That's what we were trained on.
And then your first posting?
Pardon?
Your first posting.
What do you mean?
You were sent to Jamaica first?
Well, my first post in Jamaica, yes.
Was that Quebec?
Well, yes, I went straight to Quebec first for training, for small arm training. Then when we come back from there, we went to Jamaica.
Do you like Jamaica?
Oh, yes, very nice. Mm-hmm.
And what type of work did you do in Jamaica?
We did guard duty, guarding prisoners.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard?
No, very simple.
Were the prisoners well treated in guard duty?
They were treated well there.
Yeah. Well, what were they like? Did you get to know any of them?
No, I didn't get to know very many of them because I wasn't quite long enough. Mm-hmm. So, see, I was a reinforcement to Jamaica. Mm-hmm. The battalion was down there when I went down there. Mm-hmm. There was only about 60 of us went down, and the battalion was already.
Mm-hmm. Who? What were the prisoners? Italians? Germans?
They're Italian Germans, mostly.
Uh-huh. I suppose you can speak German, eh?
No, I can't.
Oh, I was going to say, you could have come in handy. Then you got posted back to Winnipeg.
We didn't come back to Winnipeg. We went our 2 weeks leave, but then we went to Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. How long were you married then?
I was married in 1936.
Oh, yeah. So did you have family then?
Yes, I had a daughter and a son.
And tell me about how you got to Hong Kong when you left Winnipeg and so forth.
Well, when we got to Hong Kong, the war didn't declare Kalashki till the 7th of December. So therefore, we arrived there. It was about 3 weeks or something like that before the war declared, which it didn't give us much time to, you know, to maneuver around there.
Yeah, you didn't get to know the island or anything?
Not very well, no.
And where were you when war was declared? The day? That day?
That day we were in the residence of a Chinese home. And that's how we found out the war declared. And Pearl Harbor was hit that day.
Quite a shock, eh?
It was quite a shock.
So, you just hurry back to the barracks?
No, we did. Well, our position was in Hong Kong anyway, so we didn't have that far to go on for our garrisons, mm-hmm. for our pillboxes. We stayed there for one night, then we moved out the next morning to our battlefront.
Mm-hmm. Where was the battlefront? Did it have a name?
Actually, it was the coastline. It was just around the reservoir.
It's the coastline at the reservoir. And you were on machine gun. How many were you there? Have you any idea?
Well, there was a whole platoon was there. Mm-hmm.
Who was your
A company?
Do you remember who your sergeant was, or who was your?
Or Sergeant Major Osborne.
Osborne. Yeah. You were with him when he got his VC?
Well, we're in the same position, but I wasn't with him at that moment when he got killed.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember him very well?
Yes, I did.
He was a friend of yours?
Well, he was a regimental sergeant, major, but he was a very nice fellow to get along with.
Mm-hmm. And was he the one that you were under his orders?
Under his orders, yes. Mm-hmm.
So the Japanese attacked you from all around?
Well, when we moved into our position, we knew that when we started fighting, started shooting at one another, that when we found out we were pretty well surrounded because there was gunfire coming from behind us, too.
Mm-hmm. And those were, you figure, guerrillas that were there already?
They were settled there when we moved in.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then the Japanese came by the shore?
And they come.
Off boat, then?
Well, they were on shore already.
They
some of
shore.
Them, most of them were on shore already.
Yeah.
Coming up in the States. They made their landing actually. There was quite a few on land.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we moved into this position because they made their landing. You see. Mm-hmm.
What did they bring with them in the landing? Did they bring some guns with them and set them up?
Oh yes, well they had their machine guns and their horses and whatever artillery they had.
They had their artillery with them and everything.
Oh, yes.
And well, how about the boat? Was this offshore shelling or anything?
Well, they were shelling from our shore from the other side.
Uh-huh. And then you had to retreat.
We had to retreat back. As we retreated back, we were surrounded, and we couldn't move too far back, you know.
Uh-huh.
We just had to stay there to see what happens.
Uh-huh. And then you were finally captured?
We were captured.
Mm-hmm. About how many of you guys survived that in that platoon? Have you any idea?
There wasn't, I'd say there must have been about 16 or 18 of us that come out of there. That
mm-hmm. And Osborne was
then,
killed right there.
And Osborne was killed in the battlefield. As
mm-hmm. And you had wounded there and they were left.
Oh yes, they were left in the shed where the explosion happened.
Mm-hmm. And the wounded that were on the shore when you retreated, you didn't pick those up either?
No, we couldn't pick them up, we couldn't touch them.
So they just, you never saw them again?
No, we never seen them again.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me about the shed.
When we were in the shed, we were in there for that one night, and I don't know whose shells they were, I couldn't see it to this day what happened there, but the shells hit the roof, and they come right through the roof, and a couple of shells went through the wall and killed most of them inside there. I don't think there was any more than about maybe 14 or 12 that come out of there that very day. There was nothing the matter with them, like.
Mm-hmm.
The rest were practically wounded.
It fell in front of you?
But we couldn't take the wounded out and told us not to. They wouldn't let them go in, we just told them to stay there.
Mm-hmm. Then what did the Japanese do with the prisoners? They marched you?
They marched us for 2 days. And then anybody that was wounded, they dropped up and never seen them again. They took them out of the line itself.
And then where did they take you to?
Well, it took us on the shoreline to Kowloon's side. It took us across to a prison camp.
Mm-hmm. What was that name of that camp?
That was North Point.
North Point. And you weren't wounded?
No, I wasn't wounded at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you arrived in North Point, you must have been some of the first prisoners, were you?
We were the first prisoners, yes.
Mm-hmm. Were there any other prisoners in there? Were there civilians?
Yes, there was civilians there. A few civilians and a few army fellows there. See, they had a battalion in Kowloon site on the border, but they evacuated because the minute the move started, the war declared, they pulled out of the position. They went into Hong Kong. They couldn't hold them back there. So they evacuated and they went into Hong Kong.
So when you got into that prison camp, when you were sitting there, they were still fighting over on the island.
Oh yes, they were still fighting. The battle went on until the 25th of December when the surrender came.
And how did you feel about it? Did you figure right then that you guys had lost? Did you have a pretty good idea?
Oh yes, we didn't think we could hold it at all.
Mm-hmm.
We had a pretty good idea. We didn't have no plane support there. We didn't have artillery. We didn't have a transport there.
So there was nothing?
Actually, we just had what the civilians had there to fight with. Old trucks, old army equipment.
Obsolete.
Absolutely. Half of them wouldn't run half ways.
Yeah. So that made it tough for you.
They made it harder because we didn't have our equipment there.
Tell me about your camp life.
Well, camp life was, for the first 6 months, was about the roughest, I believe. It was, you only had rice once a day, and then you start getting sick from then on. You start getting beriberi and malnutrition.
Did you get the diphtheria?
I was in the camp and they had diphtheria, but I didn't have diphtheria. I had beriberi, dry beriberi, beriberi, and yellow jaundice and dysentery.
Did you stay in that camp, or what did you do after this? You know, did they start putting you guys to work?
Well, they did have work parties later on. I believe it was about 6 or 7 months after they started to have work parties, which the guys got out and did some work, you know, to keep them more or less in shape.
Mm-hmm. Did you go on those?
Yes, I went to a few of them.
Where were you sent to work?
The first work party we were sent to was built at the Kitek Airfield.
What did you do there?
We were moving earth around.
Mm-hmm. What was your job, do you remember?
Pardon?
What did you have to do?
Moving earth around.
No, but I mean, did you have a shovel or what?
Well, we had bags, and we just put the earth in the bags, and two fellows would carry it on their bags like.
Mm-hmm. And you had to dump it somewhere else?
You had to dump it someplace else.
It was rather old-fashioned, eh?
Oh, yes, it was Chinese style.
Yeah. Who else was working there? Were there Chinese coolies and other people?
Oh, Chinese coolies, yes. They were working there, too. Mm-hmm. They had different shifts and different hours and the different times.
Mm-hmm. And did you have a quota? Did you have to take so many bags per day?
Well, we had to keep moving.
Keep moving?
Yes.
And you got paid for that?
No, I didn't get paid for that.
No, they didn't give you any amount of money, eh? Did you get cigarettes or anything?
Well, later on they did give us cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did give us. Later on, we were given some, I forget what it was, 5 pence or something like that, five cent, what they call it, cent, well, it's Chen, it's Japanese, something like a nickel or something like that.
Mm-hmm. A day.
That's high pay. No union.
Well, they didn't have a union.
How did the people in charge of construction job treat you guys?
Well, some of them were pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends, you know, on what kind of a guard you had at times. Sometimes you had a good one, sometimes you really had a bad one. Some of them made your work twice as hard than others.
Did you ever get a chance to get any little food or steal a few vegetables or anything?
No, it was pretty hard. There was nothing there to take like that. Mm-hmm. There was nothing growing there, actually, you know, on the airfields or... Because the minute you got off the airfield, you got into the boat and went back into the barracks, into the prison camp again.
What time did you leave the prison camp in the morning?
Well, we started off, I think we used to get up sometimes 4 o'clock in the morning. We used to sit out for about an hour and a half before we get the boat, before they get us the boat.
And then you would work all day?
Then you'd work all day till about, let's say, till about 6 and get back for 7 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And did they feed you on the job too?
Yes, you had your lunch, bowl of rice.
And bowl of rice in the morning?
Well, you had that at prison camp.
And then
at the work party, you'd had a bowl of rice at lunch hour.
Mm-hmm.
Then you don't get nothing to eat till you come back to the.
And after you finished that work detail, what did you do after that?
Well, just light around the sun.
Mm-hmm. And did you stay in that prison camp?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. They didn't give you other work details?
No, not if you were on work parties outside, he didn't do anything.
No, but I mean, after you finished the airport work party, did you go away?
Oh, yes, they had different jobs. Then you had to dig up sort of a garden, so you had to dig tunnels for air raid shelters.
How'd you make out in the gardens? You like that better?
Well, we didn't do too much of that.
Were you able to bring back some vegetables?
Well, that's just for digging before.
You
never got out there after it was grown, don't you?
They were too smart.
I think you were too smart for that.
Yeah. And you dug air raid shelters?
Well, most of the air raid shelters. We were digging tunnels way in these sometimes. Well, for about a quarter of a block, I'd say. Inside, about to a door. Very unsafe. Because that earth is now you're digging in, you're underneath that, all that dirt, and it could have collapsed any time, you know, which it did lots of times, but we weren't there when it happened.
Did they put posts up as you were digging in, like they did my tunnel?
They did, but it wasn't enough to hold it back, though. Mm-hmm.
The overseers, the Japanese overseers, were they, some of them, good engineers, or did you think they were pretty, didn't know what they were doing?
Well, I guess they're pretty good engineers if they're on their own home front, because they'll have it more real for us than they would in the prison camp where we were.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, like, did they know what they were doing when you guys were digging it, or do you think that they didn't know how to brace those tunnels?
Well, not quite, no. They put a lot of guards in it. I don't think they knew anything much about it at all, you know. Because mm-hmm. lots of times we had to complain about that for us, but it was unsafe to go in there. But he didn't carry any of it, he just had to go, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. So these air raid shelters, when they finished digging them, they weren't safe?
No, they weren't safe. I think if they dropped a bomb around here, I think they would have collapsed.
What was the earth like there? Was it stony?
Well, it was sort of a sandy mm-hmm. earth, mm-hmm. something like in Vancouver. Sort of earth that the water just touches the ground and disappears before you even know it is gone.
Mm-hmm. So, was the digging hard, or was it pretty?
The digging wasn't hard. It was sort of soft, on the soft side, you know, but still, the deeper you dug, the harder it seemed to got, you know. That. But what they used to do, they used to dig, go on straight in, they used to dig straight up. So they can get on top, you know. So they can have paths to run in and out and aerate as well, and on, you see.
Did they use those shelters?
Well, Japs did.
Good. Did you have to, after you finished digging the shelter net, were you sent to Japan?
No, I wasn't. I didn't go on that path to Japan. That's when I went blind there for a while. Mm-hmm. So I missed that path.
Where were you in the hospital?
I was in the hospital that time.
Mm-hmm. What did they do for you?
Well, they didn't have much you could do for me there. They just let it go as it was, and so. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get any pills?
No, the only thing we did get is not insulin, but beriberi vitamin, some kind of a vitamin.
Iron pills,
something like that.
And did it help you much?
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
So I didn't get enough of that, too.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you in the hospital?
Not very long. We'd come in and out. Mm-hmm. Maybe stay there a week or two to get out again.
Mm-hmm. I guess you'd rather go out working than stay
there? Well, I was funny that guy. I could never just lie around doing that and sit still. I always had to be moving around.
Mm-hmm. Did you get dysentery?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. So, did you get, how about Red Cross parcels?
Oh, we didn't get those till near the end of the war. Mm-hmm. I'd say about time was the last 6 months before the war ended.
How about letters?
I did get a few postcards, a few letters, and a few pictures, a few snapshots. But that was in about, it was 1944, just before, so, well, let's see, about here, before the war ended.
Mm-hmm. What did you? I'm just going to turn it off.
Heavier man and a taller man, a lot harder, and rather took a short guy with his right weight only, you know. And I don't know, the taller and the heavier you were, once you start losing a lot of weight, you seem to just fall apart, you know, and it shows right away on them, you know. But I don't know, just younger, I mean, I believe what it is, it's the way you live in life, you know. Mm-hmm. Some guys had it a little easier than other guys, you know. The guys that had it hard, even at home or something like that, you know. I think they'll last a lot longer than the ones that I had it too easy.
Did you ever get a paper, have anything to read or anything?
Well, we used to get the Hong Kong paper there, but it was all Japanese, their point of view, you know, and their propaganda.
You got books though, didn't you?
We didn't get the books.
Did you do any other work? Did you, were you ever did any orderly work or anything like that?
No, I never did that. I did for a while there. I was looking after the sick. That's when they had the diphtheria going on then. But I didn't work there too long because the Japanese were very strict about things like that. They only had so many guys looking after so many sick and that's it, you know.
Did you have any bully guard, any guard that was a bully? Do you remember any special one?
Well, they had Kamloops, that's the only one I can think of.
What was he like?
He was pretty rough. Mm-hmm. He was a candidate too. Mm-hmm. I guess you heard about him.
He started to. Do you remember anything he did, anything special?
Well, he used to beat up the fellows.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did he ever tackle you?
No, no, I never got around to me.
Were some guys type of guys that seem to look for trouble, that they seem to pick on?
You know, I hear some of these fellas, I don't know, you look at them and you think, well, he's the guy that was there. When they're smiling, that's when you got to watch them.
Yeah.
When they look straight at you and they don't say nothing, they don't smile, they don't seem to do anything about it. Yeah. It's when they smile, that's when they got something on their mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, Did you think the Japs were holding back the food on you on purpose? Do you think they could have fed you more?
Well, they were holding out the cross prices other than that. Mm-hmm. They held them back for almost the war, almost was near the end. Because they were there a long time before that.
And they wouldn't let you guys
in? No. Well, you can always tell because cigarettes or some water, you couldn't smoke them. So you can imagine how long they were in the storeroom or wherever they had them.
Now, what happened when war was declared? What were you doing? The war was over. How was that?
Well, when the war went over, it happened so fast. We got up one morning there, and the first thing I know, they turned down the fence. That's the fence between the officers' quarters and the private quarters. They tore that fence off. Then we knew that the war was at the end. Because they did have the officers separate from the privates, you know, and sergeants and that.
Mm-hmm. And then what did you do?
Then we just stayed around the camps.
How did you feel?
We felt very happy about it, I guess.
And who were the first guys to come see you, relieve you?
Well, Navy, the Prince Roberts was the first ship to arrive in Hong Kong Harbor. That's the one that escorted us to Hong Kong.
What did you do that day? Did you go to town and whoop it up or what?
Well, we did leave the parish. We went to downtown to see all the ships.
What was your first meal like out of barracks? What was your first good meal? Do you remember that?
Well, we didn't actually get a very good meal there, but we did get it when we got on the boat coming back to Canada.
Mm-hmm. And when you came back by boat?
We come back, we left Hong Kong by boat, but we didn't go straight home. We went to the Philippines, Manila. We stayed there for about 3 weeks. We went through a medical board there.
And then you were fed well.
And we were fed well. They were well looked after there.
I remember because you told me that.
And then from there, then in Victoria.
And what did they do for you? Were you put in the hospital for a while?
No, I wasn't put in the hospital until we got back to Winnipeg. We were under medical care at the barracks in Victoria.
Mm-hmm. And what was wrong with you?
Then we were really run down then.
Mm-hmm. How much did you weigh?
Well, I didn't weigh very much then. I weighed about 88 pounds then, I think, or somewhere around there.
And what's your normal weight?
When I went for overseas, I weighed about 102, 1938.
Mm-hmm. So if, you had it really went down. And were you left with anything from your beriberi?
Right.
Have you anything left from your beriberi?
Well, I got the chronic condition from that.
Pardon?
Chronic condition.
You have it. Is your feet bothering you?
White.
Mm-hmm. How about your eyes?
Feet bothering the eyes. My eyes, well, I'm partially blind.
Yeah, you are. And what type of work are you doing now?
I'm working as in the box factory, paper box factory.
You didn't go back to your printing?
Well, I couldn't do that work, so I couldn't do the printing.
With your eyes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And you're on pension?
Yes.
And did you have a hard time to go back to family life? Did you miss the men, or did you feel lost?
Well, I did for, let's say, for about a year and a half or so. I was really restless. And what I mean, I just didn't know where.
You didn't know
where I belonged, to nowhere, more or less.
And you came home to family and a wife, and you had to start leading a home, the household, and after being taking orders all this time, did you find that hard?
No, not.
No.
Of course, she was in the hospital for
about a while. But I was in the hospital for about a year and a half.
So,
I was in a note, go off that, you know, it's.
What, did you get a TB or anything like that?
No, I didn't get TB, no.
Mm-hmm. And now you're working in the box factory?
In the paper box factory.
And how is it hard on you?
Well, it is. It's hard on my feet because I'm on my feet all day, you see. If it wasn't for that, it wouldn't be too bad.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about this prison camp? But do you feel that do you have anything against the Japs? Do you hold anything? Or
No, I don't.
You don't have any resentment?
No.
Do you feel sort of that they didn't treat you too bad? Or?
Well, they treated you bad, but I always looked at it a different way. As I said, when I joined the army, I could respect it for bad and good.
Mm-hmm.
Which is this in every army which you belong to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I was
going to. War, I forgot to mention that they greeted us when we arrived Hong Kong. They made a few sweeps over the ship, and those are the ones that got blown to pieces first when the Japs declared war. So that was the end of our air activity, first morning of the war.
What was your job to do up on this hill?
Well, our job was to defend the colony. And
were you digging up there?
We were, well, as far as digging in, we were just up there trying to get familiar with the land, you know, to where, so we'd be able to get around that much better.
Did you have guns
with you? Well, yes, we had rifles. We had a Sten gun. We had other small weapons, and we had grenades. But we have no big guns. The British had gun emplacements in. That were set around the island, facing out to sea. But they were fixed so as they could shoot just out to sea, and that wasn't really too much good for us either. Except that it kept the Japanese Navy out to sea; they couldn't come in too close until they had knocked them out, which took them 3 weeks. They did not want to even fight for the place at the time, according to the statements I had heard, that I will say that we had three truces. The first one we had was about 2 days after a war with the Japanese, and our governor, or acting governor at that time, I don't remember what his name was, but anyway, they had a meeting, and there was no giving up at that time. We wouldn't give up. And, of course, the war started popping up again, and the Japanese were at that time were trying to get as close to the island with their howitzer so as they could shoot up into the hills at us. They eventually did that.
Where was the howitzer? On board ship?
No, they had their howitzers right on mainland.
Oh.
And they were shooting at us right across the bay. And that was some time before they managed to set hold on the island of Hong Kong itself. It was, I would say, about 2 weeks of war before they did manage to get a hold on the island itself. During that period, they were bombing us. They were bombing us constantly, and we had no no air support or navy or anything.
Mm-hmm.
All we had was
a
few guns emplacements, but they were shooting out to sea, and a small arms fire. That's all we had. And of course, the Japanese, they were well equipped that way. They had their big guns, and they eventually made a foothold on the island, and from there on, they gradually gained more territory until finally we had the second truce, and there was still no giving up. And then the last one we had was it was Christmas Eve. And that one was the ultimatum. We was either to give up, or it had been said that they were going to shoot all of us. So it was then that we had got the orders to surrender to the Japanese. Which I, for myself, I wasn't very happy about it, but nevertheless, it was the only thing we could do because we were all surrounded and there was no escape. We were surrounded by water, so everything was practically against us as far as making an escape at that time.
Had you fought at all?
I was in a position where I didn't get a chance to do any actual firing against the enemy at all, but I would say that if the war would have carried on maybe another day, I would have probably had plenty of it. But it just happened at that time that I was in the location where they wouldn't have reached maybe for another day. Although they were pretty close, but we were supposed to hold the place that we were allotted to at that time. So when the orders came through that to surrender, of course the white flag went up naturally, and most of us didn't have any sleep to any extent, throughout the time that the 3-week period of war, many of us were pretty droggy and tired, because we would have to be pretty well on the ball all the time. We'd get maybe in a couple hours sleep, and then somebody else would take over. And then we would be called back again. And then sometimes we wouldn't get any sleep maybe for a couple of days. So we were a pretty tired bunch, too. I will say we slept while there was all... We were scattered all over the island as far as that goes, but this particular place where I slept that night was in the Catholic monastery on one part of the island. And there was quite a bit of food there, and I had my share of it, and I run into some good old Navy rum, and of course that helped a little bit too, especially when we were tired. We all had a good slug of rum, and that was the last slug of rum I had until the war ended, and I got out of Japan in 1945. From there, the Japanese, they rounded us up the next morning, and had marched us down the main drag of the city, and I'll never forget, the Chinese were watching us, and many of them were, you know, laughing. And I thought to myself, well, that was pretty good, coming here to fight for the colony, and then they turned around now that the Japanese had taken over, and they started laughing. Well, maybe they didn't really mean to laugh at us because we had lost the war. It was something new to them. It was new to us, too. Anyway, we were put back into the same place, barracks, that we when we first arrived in Hong Kong. And, of course, the conditions were much different then. We had nothing to eat. And everything was all topsy-turvy when we got in there. We had to get the cooks and get the Japanese heads and find out we were going to have our a kitchen located and all this before we could even think about having anything to eat. And then that took about 3 days. So many of us went, I would say, about 3 days or 4 days before we got anything to eat. We just had a drink of water. And finally we did get our little kitchen made up, and they brought in this rice, and that we did have rice for the rest of the war. Mind you, I was glad to have it because I was hungry. And so was many more.
Tell me, did you have any idea you'd be a long time? Did you feel, well, here I am in camp, I'm going to be here quite a few years, or what did you feel about that? Or did they even realize that? Did you realize that?
Well, we did we did always know how the war was progressing because we had the men that put radios together secretly and unknowing to the Japanese. There was a few times I possibly say that they were caught, but that never did stop the boys from fixing up some kind of a communication so as we would able to hear about how the German war was progressing. So that was one of the things that kept our morale up throughout the whole war. We knew pretty well all the time where Germany was headed for and what their progresses was and what the Allies' progresses was. And we knew that it was going to take some time. So most of us got the idea that we were going to have to stay there for some time. So we did have our ups and downs too. Many of the boys took sick. I could go on and talk about it.
Did you get sick?
Yes, I did. I got sick in that camp, and I'm very fortunate that I'm here today.
Did you get
them
in the diphtheria?
I had pellagra, which is it's a numb feeling. I had what they call this hot foot, which the boys will tell you the same thing. It's caused by malnutrition. It's a lack of protein, but that didn't hit me till about 6 months after the war ended. Of course, I guess it was due to the fact that most of us were in our good physical shape when we ended up in the prisoner of war camp. And once we got on Japanese food, we didn't get the same benefit out of that as we did our own food. And not only that, we didn't get enough of it. I know I can say myself honestly that I was hungry all the time. And everybody else in that predicament, I would say the same thing. Anyway, there's many other things I could say, but this is the most important thing I would tell what I'm telling you right now. I mean, we lived on rice, and they made us work. We had to go out to work. The airport that exists there today, what they call the Kai Tak Airport, I remember in that 2 years of a prisoner of war in Hong Kong, many of us were detailed to go out to work at this airport that they had. And we moved a mountain. We moved a small mountain down into the gully, and the Japanese, they made a huge runaway out of it. And I guess now the British are using it.
Hmm. How many men would you be working out there? Have any idea?
Well, there was all of 500 Canadians that worked on that at that airport that we had these little narrow gauge rail carts, and we used to shovel the mud in there and run it down into the gully, dump it, and bring it back up again. The other guy will shovel it and we'll take it down until we finally we got her down there. Anyway, we said at that time that one day the British will have this back again, and of course, naturally, they're using it now. But the Japs, they made a big runway out of it.
Did you get paid for that?
We got 10 cent a day. That was worth about maybe 2 cents our money. We couldn't buy anything with it anyway. There was no way we could buy anything with it.
Mm-hmm. So. You never put to use your trade as a carpenter. They never called you in to do anything there.
No, they never even asked us anything about that. Well, not where I was anyway. Too much of a hurry to do any carpenter work for the Japanese anyway. My concern was to try to get away if I could at that time. But when I went to, before I come to that, I'll tell you a little bit more about Hong Kong. When I took sick, that was about really sick for what about it. Really sick for what about a year after I was a prisoner of war in Hong Kong. I got run down and I had this what they call it, couldn't keep anything in my stomach, and of course you just gradually deteriorate, and I laid in the death camp there for many days, and I didn't die. Our padre came in one time. He says, "You better get out in the sun, because you're getting pretty thin," or words to that effect. He gave me a candy. It was our own padre. I forget his name now. He lives in Vancouver. So I rolled outside into the sun every day for about a couple of weeks. And by golly, I began to get stronger. I began to get strong enough so as I could get up and walk a little bit. Well, then after that, the Japs sent a few of us to what they call Bone Road Hospital on the island side, and I stayed there for about 6 months. Well, it wasn't too much better, but it was a little bit better.
Do you have Japanese or Canadian doctors?
Well, we had British and Canadian. Mm-hmm. We were all together in that escapade.
Actually, our own allied doctor, Dr. Green.
Is that right?
Yeah, is that what you found in that place?
They which?
Our own allies, I mean, British and Canadian doctors. Yes. Were your doctor, like the Japanese didn't teach you, did they?
No, not really. The Japanese doctors, they were, they maybe did come in, but they were just overseeing, you know. They didn't actually do anything for us. They just told our doctors what we had to use, and that was it. And they only had the medicine that the Japanese would give them. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty squimpy too. So anyway, I got well enough. Got well enough so they took me back to the camp where I was, over on the Kowloon side. And from there, I stayed for 1943. They rounded a bunch of us up, and they loaded us into a scrap iron freighter, and it was a 3-week trip to Japan. Changed ships at Formosa. This one was leaking. It was going down, so we had to get out and get on a Japanese troop ship. Put us in the hole again. They did let us go up once a day for air. I just was glad because there was rats in there. They were just waiting for anything to happen, and I know what that was. And we landed in the place where they had dropped the atom bomb in 45, that was Nagasaki and Hiroshima. We went from Nagasaki to Hiroshima. And then from there by train I went. Well, they had about 400 of us, I guess. There was Canadians and British and some Americans. And they lined us up on the street. They went along, break the line here, this line go there, that line go there, no matter who, if you're mixed up or not, you go that way. So I went to a city called Nagoya. That was a big industrial center of the Japanese, and they already had established a prison camp with high walls on the outskirts of the camp, about 10 miles. But they had the electric tram service. We used to walk about a couple of miles to the tram. From where we, after we got settled down in the camp, yeah. And we used to work in a factory where they made locomotives. Many of our men used to be sick sometimes, but the Japanese, in order to keep the right numbers, they used to make us carry them to work and carry them back again.
What was
so
your job in that?
My job was shoveling coal. And sometimes carrying pipes. And the factory at that time, once in a while, they would give us a little bun. Oh, just about half, maybe about that size of a cup. And that sure was pleasing. And, well, of course, we stayed there a long time.
Were they pretty good?
Pardon?
The fellows in the factory, the Japanese in charge, were they pretty good, these guys?
Well, actually, the Japanese workers, I found that there was good and bad. But most of them that I had worked alongside with, they weren't bad people, as far as I was concerned. It wasn't their fault. I mean, they were at war, and but they weren't allowed to, to work right with us all the time. We were put by ourselves, more or less, and these Japanese guard around, you know. And if we saw that they was talking too much with the civilians, they used to, push us away. Why, I don't really know. Maybe they figured, well, they maybe give us something to eat or something, you know. And anyway, I stayed there that prison camp until March, about 1940, 45, I guess, March 45, and the Japanese, they bombed that place to bits. They moved us further north to a place called Toyama.
The Japanese bombed it or the Americans bombed it?
No, the Americans, I mean to say, they bombed that factory. And we moved about 500 miles further north, a place called Toyama. And it ended up in this camp, it was only 5 Canadians, the rest were Americans.
How many Canadians?
It was 5 in this particular
camp. American camp.
It was an American, well, it was American prisoners of war. And up until we stayed there until the end of the war, but 2 weeks before the war, the Americans, they came over and they bombed pretty extensively. And the last few days of the war, they pretty near hit us where we were. They dropped in their incendiary bombs and the high explosives, and they blew the factory up.
What was that factory?
And that was the end. Well, this was the factory that they made steam rollers in Toyama. Of course, they had a little camp we had just on the outskirts of the town, and we used to have to walk into the factory and work there. I worked, me and another chap, he works in the post office here now. What's his name again? George Harrison, him and I. You'll never forget either. We were making molds for steamrollers in our bare feet in this factory, you know, sand and dirt, you know, we'd make the molds, and then they put another mold over the top, and they'd drop the metal inside and make a big wheel. That was our job. So then it was about 3 days before we knew that the war was ended, you know. The camp commandant, third day, I guess, he went away and he came back and he said, "You men are now guests of Japan." He says, "The war is over." He says, "You can go home now." But it was another week before I got out of there.
How were the Americans treated in the camp compared to Canadians? Did you feel any difference?
There seemed to be a greater hatred against the Americans at that time than they were us. It's pretty hard to say exactly, but apparently they were doing most of the destructive work at Japan at that time, and of course, naturally, they were going to feel a little bit worse against them, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that is one of the biggest reasons.
Were you ever able to sniff any food or get anything?
Yes, many times we used to get beaten up for it too. We'd get caught. We'd steal rice or beans or anything like that we could get a hold of and stuff it into our shirt, you know, and tie it and into our clothes. But that didn't stop the boys. They kept on doing it. They used to get beaten up pretty bad sometimes, too. But they kept on doing it.
How about any escape attempts?
We had an escape attempt in Hong Kong in 1942. A bunch of us were put into a separate, for what reason I don't know, but the Canadians were in this here particular camp. It was on the on the island side of Hong Kong. And we were there about 6 months, I guess, and two of the fellows that did make an escape there, we heard later that they were shot. They were caught in the boat trying to make their escape, and they were shot. Never made it. It was pretty hard because the difference in race too, you know. And there were so many of these fifth columnists, you know, they would sell you for a dollar, you know, so you couldn't even trust them. So I thought of it many a times. I would like to try and get away, but if we would have been there, would say maybe about 3 or 4 months, and then the war coming on, then we'd have probably had a chance, because we would have the know-how of the layout of the country, you know, better. But even the British, they'd been there a long time, and they didn't get away.
Well, there's no place to go to give a speech.
Well, you'd probably starve before you got to the destination that you started for.
How about mail? Red Cross?
I did get, it was the fall of 1940, you know, the fall of late 42, the International Red Cross ship came into the harbor and brought some medical supplies and food packages that were made up by the International Red Cross. I got about 2 out of that. They consisted of about 10 pounds a piece or something like that. But as far, that was just considered to us as a luxury.
Yeah.
Because it was just,
time.
Yeah, it was just like giving a candy to a boy, and you know, for a few days he was happy. And once that was over, well, you still had to rely on rice anyway. So, nevertheless, though, it was nice to have. And
were you allowed to write home?
At certain times of the year, we were allowed to write. The Japanese would tell us when we're allowed to write, and we couldn't. Well, that's one of those things that was sent to my aunt, and she did get it. That wasn't one round when I was in Hong Kong, yeah. But that was all that had to be censored. The Japanese censored it beforehand. So that's all as far as that was concerned. Now, well, in 1945, yeah, was it August? It ended. We happy to get out of there. And when I got on the American Red Cross ship, I said goodbye, Japan. And those who could walk were capable of getting on along themselves. All the clothes that we had on were stripped and was thrown out overboard. And the Japanese, or the Americans, gave us new clothes. And we continued our journey on. And I got on to an American destroyer, and I went to the island of Guam, and there went through doctors, American doctors, along with their own troops too, you know, that were prisoners of war. They treated us just like their own. And I stayed there for about 3 days, I guess, before I got out of there, and then I came all the way from there to San Francisco, there we had a small delegation from Ottawa that met us there and gave us $20 apiece to spend. Well, we didn't need any money at all as long as we were with the Americans, because they gave us everything we needed. Matter of fact, they gave us too much to eat. And, of course, it wasn't only eating. They were feeding us a little beer, too. Well, anyway, we stayed overnight in the San Francisco in an American barracks. The next day, we took the train, come up to Seattle, Washington, got off the train, got on to a Canadian boat, and went over to the island of Victoria, and we were outfitted in American sailors' clothes, American army clothes. They didn't really know who we was coming with. We know we were coming anyway. So once we got to the island, we went over to the military barracks and we got outfitted in our own clothes again. And of course, they did have a little party there for us in the first night. A lot of the people showed up and had a nice little time. And of course, the second, third day after that, we were rounded up. Whoever was going home got on the train, and the pattern worked. Depending on where you live in Canada, you're shipped by train. So I landed in Winnipeg about a day and a half later. So that was the end of that.
How about your family? Did they think you were alive?
They didn't know for a long time until, well, that was one of them. They knew that I was living, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you get any mail yourself?
I got two letters. Mm-hmm. Two letters. But there was many more letters that was sent but never arrived. Mm-hmm. But I did get two letters.
And what do you think kept you going in the camp? Did you just make up your mind you weren't going to give in, or what was it?
Well, I as I said before, that it was due to the news that we got through the efforts of our own people and knowing how the war was progressing. It made an awful lot of difference to the morale of the troops that time, especially for such a long time, and being sick and without proper food. If it wasn't for that, I believe many more would have passed away. Mm-hmm. But, well, I guess it's just nature to be that way. You like to live, and if you think there's a chance that you will live to the end of the war, you want to live as long as you can until you get out.
Yeah.
And that was my contention.
Yeah.
That I was hoping that one day it would end and we would be out. And we did.
How do you feel about the Japanese? Do you have any remorse or anything about
them? Well, actually, before I had anything to do with the Japanese at all, I just like ourselves. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with them until I went over there. I guess I did for a certain length of time. I created a bit of hate for them due to the fact, I suppose, that they wouldn't give us enough food and stuff like that.
Did they
just, it was just a bare existence.
Did they have it to give to you, or do you think they just gave you enough to keep you alive, deliberately?
I think they just gave us enough to keep us alive.
You think they could have got you more?
I think they could have got us more, yes. I would say possibly they was waiting to see which way the war was going to swing. And that would be one of their peace packages. And naturally, that's what it actually amounted to, too, eventually. We were supposed to be the first prisoners of war that the Japanese ever took. Quite possibly it is, too. I myself now think that the Japanese are just like anybody else. At that time, we were at war with them, and they were at war with us. But during the fighting, and then that for a long time after that, I always said, "By golly, they're not even down from the trees yet." Especially the way they went into those hospitals and bayonet people in bed. Just as far as I was concerned, then, just like animals. And especially when they turn around and go and rape the nurses, I didn't think very much of that. Of course, those fellows, they paid for it with their lives, that did create these things. The Japanese officer lined them up. I didn't see it actually happen, but lined them up. And who they were shot.
Oh, for doing that, for ravaging the people.
They were shot. But now it's a long time since that war is over now. There's no use of trying to hate people, because that isn't the right thing to do. We are dealing with them now, same as any other country. And I think that we might as well let bygones be gone.
Yeah. How is your health?
Forget about it. Oh, I think I'm very, as far as I'm concerned, I'm very lucky compared to a lot of the boys. Lots of them, their eyesight has dissipated so badly that they can hardly see. And it is due to that, I would say. Mine is not as good as it was, but I'm not as young as I used to be either. My health, I would say I'm not too bad, although I do have a little trouble with my feet and my stomach at times. But still on the whole, I'm not doing too bad, I would say.
Did you get work after you came back? You were discharged.
Oh yes, I did find work, yes. Would you like to hear what I did?
Yeah.
Well, when I did get discharged was April 2nd, 1946. I thought that I would go back into carpenter work, but then the taxi cab work at that time seemed to be enticing. I figured I'd like to drive and do that, because I never did that before. And I had an opportunity to drive a cab at that time for Moore's Taxi, and I went and drove for them for, about 6 months, I guess. And then finally, my brother and I, we got in together and we got a license ourselves, and we decided that we'd go into taxi business together for a couple of years to see how it worked out, and then one of us could buy one of the others out, or we could buy a separate car and be on our own. So that's just what we did for 3 years, for 2 years, yeah, 3 years I guess it was. And then I sold my share out to my brother, and he kept it for about a year. And then he sold his share out and went. And I didn't bother about taxi cab business anymore. I quit it, and I'd been up carpenter work ever since. I don't work steadily. I work for various contractors throughout the season. Sometimes I work maybe 6, 7, or 8, 9, 10 months a year. It depends on how much work there is to do.
Yeah.
So that's as far as the work is concerned.
Mm-hmm. And are you any pension?
Yes, I got 65% now. I started, I had 30 eventually when I first got discharged, and then some years later I was up at Churchill working as a carpenter, and I got a letter from the Deer Lodge to report, and I did after I was finished there for a certain length of time, which is a month, but 4 or 5 months. And I had a raise of pension at that time, 10%. And then, sometime later, that's years later, when was it that I get that 60%? Yeah, it was 1965.
Yeah.
They'd raised all Hong Kong pensions, and mine had been raised to 60%. So that's what I get now.
No, your brother.
Pardon?
What happened to your brother? New joint.
He's in the real estate.
Oh, he's in the real estate.
He came through it fine too.
Right? Yeah, he came through it. Yeah.
Start with that. For the radio. Well,
start. Oh. Well, we'll tell you about the news as far as we were concerned doing our prisoner of war life. During all the time that I was a prisoner of war in Hong Kong, I never did get to know the men that were responsible for operating the radios in order to get the news from the BBC. Nevertheless, I was very happy when the news came around. It was not told to everybody about who was in charge of the radio or of any of that kind, and I don't think anybody really cared as long as we did get the news. So that was more or less for security reasons, so Japanese wouldn't know where to look for. Now, our news, when I reached Japan, It was sometime in prisoner of war before we did get actually any news about the progress of the war, because all the various parts of our radio components had to be hidden and carried amongst our personal belongings into the camp, so the Japanese did not see any of it. And there was a certain technicians in the in our bunch that knew how to rig radios up, and of course they eventually done so, and therefore every week or so one of the newsboys would come around to the various camp location and spring us the news while the Japanese were outside. And of course that was our paper. So when we did get those little bits of news, it made us feel that much better and that much more like living.
Where was your brother? In the same building with you, or were you just in the same camp in Hong Kong?
Well, he was a half-brother of mine, by the name of Ray Sellers. He was in the same prison camp as I was in Hong Kong, but in 1944 they shipped him over to 1942 in December, I believe it was December 42, they shipped over about 500 prisoners of war from Hong Kong to Japan, and he was in that bunch. And I did not see him until the end of the war in 1945 at the CPR station here in Winnipeg.
That was wonderful.
So that's it.